OTB Sports Radio.
This Sunday on OTB Sports Radio, we're bringing you an exclusive first listen of a special interview with Muhammad Ali's former business manager, Gene Kilroy. The last survivor from Ali's inner circle joined myself, Shane Hannan, for an hour full of great insight and never-before-told stories, such as this from just minutes before the rumble in the jungle when Ali fought George Foreman.
Ali had no fear.
And the time Ali went looking for Joe Frazier.
Ali gets out of the car, the cops said, "Where do you think you're going?" He said, "I'm looking for Joe Frazier. Where's Joe Frazier?"
Hear it first this Bank Holiday Sunday at 7 p.m. exclusively on OTB Sports Radio. Listen on offtheball.com or download the Go Loud app.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, celebrating 10 years of iconic sporting moments at the Aviva Stadium.
All right, all this week, Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, is marking the 10-year anniversary of the official opening of the Aviva Stadium and its proud long-term sponsorship of the iconic venue. To celebrate this milestone, Aviva have been paying tribute to some of the most iconic sporting moments of the past decade. Last week, we went through the football moments. Former Sligo Rovers goalkeeper Kieran Kelly won it out with his four consecutive saves in a penalty shootout in the FAI Cup final. This week, we've been looking at the greatest rugby moments of the decade in the Aviva Stadium. We want you to join in. You can follow Aviva Ireland on Instagram and on Twitter and share your favourite Aviva Stadium memories using the hashtag SafeToDream. Rugby's greatest moments in the Aviva Stadium. The Wednesday semi-final is going to be Robbie Henshaw's try against England versus Ryan Crotty's try in 2013. And it's currently 50-50 in that one. So Henshaw's try against England in 2015 versus Ryan Crotty's All Blacks try in 2013. I have a feeling a lot of GAA folk are voting for Ryan Crotty. I think that's what's happening here. And then Thursday semi-final is going to be Jacob Stockdale's try against Brian O'Driscoll, breaking the try record against England. So that was the Six Nations try record. He obviously went on to score loads more as well. So Stockdale's try against the All Blacks. Yesterday afternoon, Owen got a chance to sit down with the Ireland and Ulster star Jacob Stockdale. Really good chat. We're going to talk here about that historic win against New Zealand in Dublin and what he's been doing in lockdown as he looks to rediscover his best form. Enjoy.
Okay, so we are looking back at some of the best moments over the last decade at the Aviva Stadium. It is rugby week, so obviously Ireland against the All Blacks in 2018 has come up. And the man who scored a try that night, Jacob Stockdale, is with us. Jacob, you're very welcome. How are you getting on?
Cheers. Thanks for having me. It's going all right. Not too bad. Bit of a weird time at the moment, but yeah, I think I'm enjoying it.
Before we do a deep dive on whether or not the haircut was a success or not, we should chat about this night at the Aviva 2018. This is the night, really, at the Aviva from a rugby perspective, isn't it? And I'm sure that when you look back on it, you probably think, first of all, of how unbelievable that atmosphere was on that occasion.
Yeah, like, it's the Aviva, I think, is quite a special stadium in the sense that, like, it's not, you know, necessarily the biggest. Like, you know, you don't have the most amount of seats in comparison to somewhere like, you know, Twickenham or Stade de France, like those like massive arenas, but like the noise that can be generated, you know, in that stadium is incredible. And that night I remember like it really went to the next level where it was like, you know, every time you like caught a high ball, you got like the hairs on your neck were standing up just because like the sheer noise of the crowd, like it was class.
The high balls, the hits, I think it was James Ryan sent Brodie Retallick back about 15 metres deep into the second half and the place just absolutely erupted. I've never seen every single incident involve the crowd so much.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like you felt like you were hitting a rock and people were going wild. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. It's like that's usually stuff that nobody cares about. But yeah, just on that night, I think mainly because the game had been talked up so much. Like I remember, you know, in like the start, the first game of the season, like with Ulster playing with them, and afterwards I got interviewed and they were like, right, well, what about this New Zealand game in November?
That's
like,
right,
you know, that's about 3 months away, but like, you know, people, like they were just ready for it. And yeah, it was when it finally came around, I think like everybody was just so worked up about it, like that's where the noise came from.
What was the bigger factor going into this game, Jacob? Was it the fact that you'd finally got the job done against the All Blacks and that it gave a greater sense of confidence going in, given everything that had happened in Chicago 2 years previous? Or was it actually more to do with the fact that there had been a couple of really near misses in Dublin over the past few years?
I don't really know, because this was my first, my first time playing them. So I suppose for me, I was just focusing on my game and like just trying to have as good a performance as I could, like in, you know, what was probably the biggest game of my life to that point. So, like, for me, I was just focused on that game. I think, to be honest, like, I think the reason that, the guys were so up for it was probably a mixture of the two, was that hurt that they'd experienced, you know, in Dublin before, where, like, New Zealand, you know, pulled it off in the last play. And then, obviously, you know, in Chicago, they knew that, they made the team realise that they could beat them. And they could have those massive performances. So yeah, I think it was probably a bit of both. You know, a bit of hurt from the last time in Dublin, and, you know, a bit of confidence from Chicago.
Yeah, because, like, the 2013 game always sticks out as the real near miss when it comes to the All Blacks. But I think what people forget as well is that a week or two after the game in Chicago, the All Blacks came to Dublin and really completely beat Ireland up, bent every single rule possible under the sun. Was that spoken about going into this game, where it's like, if somebody's kind of coming in at the side, if their rules being bent, if they start to get down and dirty, we've got to get down there with them. But was that spoken about at all going into the 2018 game?
Yeah, definitely. It was spoken about a good bit. You know, like, we felt that in that game, the previous game, like, there should have been definitely one red card, potentially two. And obviously that flips the game massively. So going into it, like Joe talked about, I think the term we used was bullying the bully. You know, and like that was just talked about our physicality, you know, and just and picking out certain players in their squad who were there like enforcers, you know, and making sure that we were all over them and that they didn't get a break physically the entire game. And I think, you know, in hindsight, it was a game plan that worked brilliantly.
Who were the enforcers that he had picked out in that All Blacks team?
Brody, I remember Brody Retallick was definitely one, just his physicality. You know, and he is like, if you watch him play, like he is a kind of, like he's, you know, just the kind of guy that does beat people up a wee bit, like, and he does it brilliantly, you know. So he was definitely one that, you know, the intention was to go after him.
Your try that night, the chip and run, I think in interviews around this time when you got a couple of these sort of tries, you put it down to luck, but it must have been down to a little bit more than that. It was more than just the bounce of the ball, obviously. There is the athleticism to get past Aaron Smith at this point, where he kind of sees you coming over his left shoulder. With the passage of time, have you looked back on that purple patch and thought to yourself, this is exactly what I was doing, that this is why things were really going my way during this point in my career?
Yeah, to a certain extent. Like, obviously, actually, with being in lockdown, it's given me a massive opportunity to, like, reflect on the kind of last year and a half. And I think I've literally watched every single game that I've played in about the last 2 years. So I've, more just because I love watching rugby and I get bored. So I just stick a game on and I'll watch it. But, I think, to be honest, there was that confidence there of being able to back myself. Which is probably something that, like, I've gone away from recently, because I suppose to a certain extent I've tried to be a bit too smart with my game, you know, and trying to be a bit too tricky when realistically, like, you know, I know I'm best whenever I run up defenders and try and get past them, and it's, you know, sounds stupid, but it is as simple as that. So I think, yeah, like, just having the confidence and mobility is something that, when everything's going right and whenever you're, you know, 21 and scoring tries all the time, like, it's easy to back your confidence. But whenever you've had a year that's been a bit quieter, then, you know, it gets a bit tougher.
What sparked that change? What sparked the change in you perhaps not backing yourself fully to the hilt?
I don't really know. Probably to a certain extent, you know, when you get a couple of poor performances, you know, like, that's whenever you start to doubt yourself. I think, you know, probably for me during the World Cup was when I kind of, it was the first time where I'd really doubted exactly, you know, how good a player I am. Like, I think I've definitely, you know, come through that, and I'm kind of on the other side of that and really excited about, you know, hopefully rugby starting up soon. But yeah, I think, you know, it's that kind of idea that you're only as good as your last game, and whenever you get a couple of poor games in the bounce, then that confidence drops a wee bit.
Was there a particular moment in the World Cup when you realised that a little bit of that confidence had deserted you?
I think after the Samoa game, and it wasn't necessarily that I'd lost the confidence. It was just the enormous amount of frustration I felt with that game, because I felt like I'd you know, just tried everything I could to get into the game and to score, you know, score a couple of tries, and it just wasn't happening for me. And I was looking at other lads like, you know, Jordan Armour and, you know, Andrew Conway, who are both playing, who played, you know, very good rugby in that World Cup, and just were getting more and more frustrated. So yeah, that was a like a bit of a turning point for me. And then coming back from the World Cup, I decided that I really needed, you know, to find a new mindset and change that.
And how did you manage to find that?
Again, like just kind of going back to making sure that I enjoyed rugby. And you know, trying to find my way back into that kind of that confident, you know, mindset where, you know, I just want to take players on, and I think I have got back to that, you know, to a certain extent. I think during the Champions Cup with Ulster, like I felt really good, or really enjoyed those games. Didn't score any tries, and sometimes it happens, you know. But yeah, I was really just happy with where I got to.
Well, like it's interesting when you mentioned the Champions Cup this season, like. Possibly, I don't want to speak for you, but possibly your most memorable moment so far this campaign is the tackle against Bath. And it's a defensive effort. And I think a lot of the talk around you as well has been even being moved to 15 in the red and white of Ulster as well. It's not just the try-scoring Jacob Stockdale we're seeing now. It is a multi-positional defensive Jacob Stockdale that we've started to see over this domestic season post-World Cup.
Yeah, I think, like to be honest, that's on the flip side of what I was just saying. That's something right. that I'm massively proud of over the last year or two, is that like my ability, you know, as a multi-positional player has kind of come to the fore a bit more, and that people are kind of seeing me more, potentially seeing me more as like, you know, somebody that can actually play make and you know, understands the game rather than just, you know, a youngster out in the wing that's pretty fast and can score a few tries. So yeah, that's something that I've been, you know, really, really happy with.
It's interesting when you look back at the All Blacks game, just watching a bit of it this morning, it felt that everybody was in such a flow state. So even with the move leading up to your try, the way it felt so seamless that Bundayaki was going to turn the entire direction of the attack, and all the 15 green shirts knew it was going to happen, but it took all of the All Blacks by surprise. Everybody was on the same page. Obviously, your kick goes to plan, you follow through, and it's a try. Did you feel that at the time, that you were in that state of flow? Because I think sometimes that's a hard thing to describe.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Like, it's a strange phenomenon, I'd say. You know, some days just it doesn't feel right, and, you know, it's just not going to plan. And it's not, you know, necessarily that, you know, you're missing 50 tackles as a team and they're running riot. It's just that, you know, you're 1 or 2 meters away from where you need it to be to make a tackle, or, you know, things like that. Whereas, like, on that night, it just felt that, like, if you needed somebody in your inside shoulder to, you know, help you defend, they were there. Mm-hmm. You know, if you needed, like, you know, I remember, like, deep inside their half, like, they all back through like a dodgy pass and Kieran Reid dropped it, and I kind of like went through, tackled Ben Smith, and I was like, I remember thinking like, oh, I'm gonna struggle to get him into touch, and then all of a sudden like Johnny just comes flying in and gets that second impact and batters and then in touch. And I just remember thinking like I remember thinking that if this was flipped over, how like draining and just like, you know, kind of suffocating that it would feel, you know, as an attack, which is exactly what you want when you're playing a team like the All Blacks.
Did you notice a massive step up from the All Blacks in the intervening 12 months? Like, I don't think there was ever any case that New Zealand didn't take Ireland seriously leading up to even the Dublin game. But perhaps it just put their focus on Ireland a little bit more after that. There was obviously real debates about New Zealand versus Ireland as the best team in the world, perhaps after the year of 2018. Did you feel that they'd gone up to another pitch then after you'd kind of given them a wake-up call in Dublin?
I don't really know, to be honest. I mean, you know, they're always going to be a team that you're going to talk about when you're talking about the top one or two teams in the world. Do you know what I mean? They're always going to be in that bracket. But I think, like, to be honest, there's just certain times when other teams have the ability to go ahead of them. Do you know? But I think, like, you know, for instance, in the World Cup, it was South Africa. South Africa just got it right, and that's when you're able to beat them. But to be honest, I think, you know, as a long-term team, they've just found that ability to be, you know, to be constantly competing at the highest level. And I think, yeah, that whenever it came to the quarterfinal of the World Cup, you know, nearly a year later, like, they were definitely ready for us.
Yeah. So when you're going back to look at all these games that you mentioned during the last few weeks, are you looking at the World Cup games? Is it a struggle to actually think about some of the tougher moments during your career and then actually going through the process of sitting down to analyse that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think, like, if you only go and watch, like, the nice bits, you know, you're just, like, you're living in a fairy tale, to be honest. Because realistically, like, you know, players, even world-class players, best players in the world, have bad games. And that's something that you have to accept. So no, yeah, I go back and I watch every single game, and I watch the tough bits and I make myself watch them. I don't want to, but I think, you know, it's actually quite, like, I can remember a lot of the moments where I haven't played well and what was going through my head at that point. And, you know, whenever I can kind of get back into that mentality, then I can, you know, I can see why, where my mentality was wrong, and then I can fix it going forward. Like, you know, one example that, like, I can think of is actually just when we come back from the World Cup. We went down, Ulster went down to Thorn Park to play Munster, and I had, like, a shocking game. Just didn't do anything, like, nothing. Like, you know, and I just, my head wasn't in the right space. And I remember my mentality before that game was, like, that, you know, I was trying to be, like, real, like, kind of chatty and lippy to the Munster boys, because I figured, I thought that in my head, you know, I could get a one-up on them because they would think, because, you know, obviously being in the World Cup, like, I knew a lot of them and they, you know, I could maybe get inside their head. But realistically, all it did was take me away from my game and what I was able to focus on and what I was good on, and I had a poor game. And, you know, I watched that and I remember thinking about that. So whenever we played Munster home, I completely flipped it and I focused on myself. And I have, you know, probably my best game of the season. So yeah, I think there's massive benefits from looking at the stuff that you really don't want to.
So you're not a trash talker then?
Well, the odd time maybe, like, but yeah, I've realised that, you know, whenever I start going out of my way to slag the boys and the other team off, even if it's banter, like, I stop focusing on my own game, and to be honest, I realised that, as much as self-centered as it sounds, whenever I'm focusing on myself, that's when I play best.
So what sort of stuff were you saying to the Munster lads?
I haven't said that.
I'm sure they're pretty well able to give it back anyway. It's interesting when you think about your own trajectory. If we kind of say that the 2017-18 season was kind of when you started to go stratospheric and, like, an absolute staple of the Ireland team, scoring in every game, it seemed, in the Six Nations that year. This is almost like your first real break, isn't it? Given that last summer was filled with Australia and then preparation for the World Cup. Like, it's been a long old period, and this pandemic has given you the first opportunity to actually step away from the game for a little bit. And, like, I was going to go into this conversation and ask you what you've been doing with that. You've clearly used it for one really constructive reason, which is to go back and analyse old games. Is there anything else you're doing in terms of self-reflection?
No, I think to be honest, like, a big thing that I've focused on over the course of lockdown is my kicking. I think because I'm a left footer, you know, I kind of give an extra bit of attacking opportunity to teams that play in. So that's something that I've been working on massively, is just getting that consistency in my kicking, because, you know, maybe 3 out of 5 times I'll be really hammer the ball long and I'll get a great kick, and then 2 out of those 5, like, they're, you know, not great kicks, and you know, I'm just not getting that consistency. So that's something that I've definitely just tried to, like, because I realised that I could potentially have 4 months here where I'm not playing any rugby, I just decided to completely break down, like, my kicking technique and, you know, essentially start from scratch again. So, yeah, no, it's starting to come back to a place where I'm actually pretty excited about it now. And, like, I'm looking forward to hopefully bringing it into games.
And how are you managing to do that? Are you going out to a park? Have you been able to get into a practice facility to be able to train on your kicking?
No, I've been very lucky. Malone Rugby Club is literally just maybe 30 seconds down the road from me, and they gave me a key for their gate, so I can just kind of come and go when I please, and there's not a soul about the place, so, you know, it's pretty much ideal. And yeah, like, I'm very, very grateful to them, because it's very generous of them.
You're back in Armagh at the moment.
No, I'm in Belfast. I'm staying in Belfast, so I am, yeah.
Because I was reading a little bit recently about Lurgan in County Armagh, and Stephen Campbell, the GAA player, was saying that it's amazing how during this pandemic, all sides of the Lurgan community are coming together, and all different sports people are kind of helping out, whether it's like doing deliveries or things like that. And I think he was commenting in the Irish News, I think it was, just about how amazing it was and an amazing stamp of where the place is at the moment, that the entire community is coming together for this one cause, which is to help each other out during a very tricky time.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, yeah, like, you know, you mentioned Stefan there, like, he's a great fella, and you know, I think it speaks volumes when, like, the captain of the Armagh GAA team is going, you know, to Lurgan Rugby Club, which is in the middle of Mornview, which would be quite, you know, like a unionist dominated estate. And he's, you know, getting bundles of food and delivering them all over Lurgan, you know. And, yeah, I think that's massive for the community. And, yeah, I think we've come a long, long way in that sense where, you know, like, it doesn't really make a difference where you're from or how you were brought up. Like, it is sport that's bringing us together, which, again, is massively exciting, you know, for us. Like, you know, I played my first ever game of Gaelic like last year with all those boys, and it was great crack. You know, it was shocking. I was absolutely coming. It was just like, and that's just something that I wouldn't really have ever even thought of doing growing up, because, you know, that's just, I suppose, not what you do.
Yeah.
But hopefully we can get to the point where that is what you do, and, you know, every kid goes and they play hurling, Gaelic, like, you know, football, rugby, cricket, where it's just, you know, it's like whatever sport you want to play, you just do it.
Absolutely, absolutely, no question about that. I must ask, what position did he play when you're, I presume it was Gaelic football rather than hurling you were playing, was it?
Sorry, yeah, it was Gaelic football. Yeah, I was full forward, like, so.
That was bad.
Yeah, I scored one goal, so I was pretty happy with that.
Happy days. I was trying to think, where would you play in football? I think whoever was manager of that team got it spot on. You were the ideal full forward, I think, for game of Gaelic football. It's actually, like, just when I was doing a little bit more and reading a bit of those Stephen Campbell comments, he was saying that, like, Clanagail used to actually train on the Pollock Park pitch during their off season and stuff like that. So this is not a new thing by any stretch of the imagination.
No, exactly. Like, I think, in fairness, that's one thing that, like Lurgan Rugby Club got really right, is that. Yeah, this has been going on for a while, where, you know, like, they're just two clubs that have a really good connection and a really good relationship. And yeah, that's pretty much how it's been for a while.
You say you're pretty excited now to get back to play, to get back and put some of that practice into action. Like, it looks like it's going to be a situation where we're going to have interprovincial derbies in an empty Aviva stadium come August. Are you all for that? Do you feel that it's a safe space for athletes to go out and play come August?
Yeah, I think so. Like, you know, realistically, like, we have to start somewhere. And I think, you know, like realistically, like, in terms of, I suppose, a financial standpoint, like, we need to get rugby back, you know, sooner rather than later. And I think there's no better way to do that than with interprovincial players who realistically, are all, you know, usually training together anyway. Not taking any flights and playing behind closed doors. I think that's as safe as it can possibly be. And for me, like, I'm just dying to get back to play any sort of rugby. You know, I'd take 15 aside on a pitch in the middle of nowhere right now, like, just to run out onto a pitch again.
Have Ulster Rugby been in touch pretty much every day, or do they leave you to your own devices for the most part?
Yeah, they've been pretty good in terms of, you know, like, just giving us the amount that we want, if that makes sense. You know, so they're kind of like they would contact us, be like, look here, you know, we can set up a Zoom meeting to chat about, you know, backfield cover if you want to do it. So here's the link. If you want to join, do. If you can't be bothered, no worries. You know, and that, like, and it, that's not work. It's just chatting with your mates about rugby, you know. In the same way, they're kind of going, look, here's you know, a gym program if you want to follow it. That'd be great. If you want to go do your own thing, like, that'd be great as well. So, yeah, obviously, like, they've been pretty good in terms of just, like, you know, giving us the opportunity to do something. But if we don't want to do it and we want to go our own way, then they're completely okay with that as well.
I said at the top that we were going to get to your hair eventually. It looks like it was a fairly recent job on the head.
Yeah, well, I've actually kind of, I think this is about the fourth time that I've shaved the back again. So I'm kind of committing to it. Like, I actually really like it. It's unbelievably handy. Like, you shave it and then you just don't think about it for about 3 weeks. And then you're like, I'll shave again and I'll shave again for 3 weeks.
So it's idea. I presume. So you've done this 3 or 4 times during this particular lockdown.
During lockdown, yeah. So I've been keeping it pretty tight.
And is this just out of boredom? Like, obviously, the practicality there is a huge factor as well, I'd assume.
Yeah, it's practicality. Also, that I didn't get too many great responses when I grew my hair out last time. So I'm thinking that I'm probably better generally with it short.
Don't let the haters hate on your hair, but the shortcut does suit you, Jacob. Listen, Jacob, it's been great chatting to you. Mind yourself during the remainder of this lockdown, and we're all looking forward to seeing you back in action in August, all going well.
No worries. Cheers. Thanks, William.
OTB AM.
With Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, celebrating 10 years of iconic sporting moments at the Aviva Stadium. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.